You're listening to a podcast from 702.
If you're listening to Gershwell Brooks here on 702 Afternoons, wonderful to be in your company, of course, in Fort Lebogile, and we'll be with you till the end of the week. And up next, we're talking about something very important. It is that time of the year. People are traveling, not just because, you know, people want to go on holiday and live a fancy life and, I don't know, sip cocktails on the beach or, you know, go and look at beautiful life, wildlife across the various parts of the country and so on and so forth. But more importantly, for many people, this is the one opportunity that they have to see family members, and not even extended family members, really close family members, including their children. But unfortunately, that does require inter-provincial travel. And I guess one of the key questions that we have to ask ourselves, and in some instances beyond inter-provincial travel, also international travel, but the one key question that we have to ask ourselves that's extremely important at this time of the year is obviously how do we do it safely amidst a fourth COVID-19 wave, and more specifically with this Omicron variant doing the rounds. It seems to be more transmissible and people seem to be catching it more easily, et cetera, et cetera. What are some of the precautions that we need to take in order to stay safe and keep ourselves safe, especially at this time of the year? It's 7 minutes past 2 o'clock. And to help us understand that is, of course, Dr. Aslam Dasu, who is a medical expert and convener at the Progressive Health Forum. Good afternoon to you, doctor, and thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Good afternoon, Yashua. Thank you for inviting me, and good afternoon to everyone listening.
Great. Doctor, I mean, my heart dropped when, we sort of slowly realized that we're in the midst of a fourth wave. I mean, everyone, including yourselves as medical professionals, have been warning us about this emerging fourth wave and that it was going to hit at about this time of the year. And you know, as much as we were in denial and as much as we didn't want it to happen, lo and behold, it happened. And I thought that the last time the president was going to speak to us, he was going to tell us that we're not going to go anywhere and we're going to stay at home. But for now, at least, fingers crossed, it doesn't seem to be the case. But it does mean that we have to be careful, if assuming we're still able to travel.
Of course. I think we start from the premise that we're still in the midst of a pandemic, and we are in the midst of a pandemic and in the midst of a surge in infection. So we've been through several of them, and I do think that there is a wide acceptance of the public health measures that should apply during these surges and that they should apply now as well. However, one must be mindful of the fact that having been under these conditions for 2 years, people are obviously tired, frustrated at the loss of the normal amenities of life and getting together with family and so on. And at a time like this, during the holidays, it becomes especially acute. It changes nothing, however, from the fact that we're still in the grip of the pandemic.
No, indeed. I mean, I can definitely attest to the fact that I'm one of those people that's excessively tired, and I do need some time away. The family needs some time away, and hopefully, and I guess to some extent, assuming that we can behave ourselves, as you had mentioned, there are health protocols in place. What we need to do is adhere to those health protocols, and it doesn't mean that there won't be a further spread, but we can minimize it severely.
Yes, and I think an interesting and an important development in the evolution of the response has been what you mentioned at the outset, that the president didn't announce any greater restrictions than were currently in place, the level one that we have. And I think that was very wise. It accords with the experience we've had and with the effects of lockdown, which are very blunt instruments, as we all know. And particularly in our environment, not particularly useful. And certainly with this fourth wave and with this particular variant driving it, it makes all the more sense to avoid doing those things that cannot help to mitigate the spread of this virus across the country and across the world, as we see. But what one must do is to assume, first of all, that you're not in a war with this virus. If you were in a war, you've already lost. Our job is to protect ourselves from a very strong evolutionary agent here that is rushing through humanity. And that is how we have to see this. And we do have measures to protect ourselves. We have personal protective measures we can take because we know how it spread. And despite its accelerated ability to do so, we can take certain measures. And of course, there's vaccination. And our great relief, I think, as the medical fraternity and the medical scientists, was that, you know, spending time and effort on measures that actually do not work, of no use, could be more productively utilized in ensuring that people adhere to the basics and get vaccinated. Because, you know, it's really the only tools we have in our toolkit that make any kind of sense at this time.
And I guess to a large extent, Doctor, I mean, obviously, you know, it doesn't mean that it's not important. We're not necessarily going to go through the political as well as the economic ramifications of some of the measures that we've seen internationally and so on and so forth. But clearly, you know, it does have an impact overall on things like our tourism industry. It does have an impact on you know, many other factors of general life, I guess. And we don't want to find ourselves, I guess that's why you and I are talking about being able to travel at this time of the year. But what are some of the precautions that we need to take in an effort to keep ourselves and our loved ones safe? Because I guess that is the number one priority in this instance, considering that I think let's start off as a starting point with the travel itself. I mean, some people, yes, they're going to get into their private vehicles and drive from, I don't know, from Johannesburg or Pretoria and off to Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Eastern Cape, the Western Cape, you know, KwaZulu-Natal, you take your pick. But simultaneously, you know, some people are also embarking in those various trips, whether it be by bus, by train, by taxi in some instances, and some people would be flying. I mean, there are precautions that need to be adhered to during those various forms of public transport and even personal transport.
Sure. So let me foreground the answer I'll give with the understanding, first of all, that the use of restrictions is only ever necessary to protect the health services. In a surge, this is particularly important because we have finite health services and an uncontrolled surge will overwhelm them.
Mm.
And the only way then to act would be to restrict. Now, in a far more developed strategy, as the government called the risk-adjusted strategy, which has been very scarcely applied thus far, you know, we can predict 2 weeks in advance where a hotspot is going to emerge, as we're beginning to see in the provinces. And measures can be taken in those areas. However, even with that in mind, we have a current situation where health services are being maintained and they don't seem to be under too much pressure. Now, having foregrounded it that way, the proposition that we are not increasing restrictions therefore does mean that people are free to travel, certainly within the confines of the country, across provincial borders, and so on. But the travel, and specifically that point, because you focused quite strongly on, is the period, perhaps, where a lot of unintended transmission can take place, unless proper precautions are taken. If you're traveling with your family and you've been a kind of family bubble and so on, that's all well and good. Your destination then becomes important. You know, are you going to be among large crowds and that sort of thing? Are you going to be among people who may not necessarily have taken the precautions you did? That will be a consideration. And you need to be aware, therefore, that engaging at your destination in behavior that you wouldn't engage in at home is just, you know, unreasonable. You shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
So that's an important thing. With specific travel modalities, public transport in particular, look, we know this is a very transmissible virus. We know that taxis are going to be running at 100%. You know that buses, planes, trains will also be doing the same. So it is important that we accept that we try as best possible during that transit period to protect ourselves. I would on a plane wear two masks rather than one, you know, especially if it's a short flight. I would make sure that the vent above my seat is on and blowing downward. You know, these are small measures you can take. They may not have big effects in the grand scheme of things, but they do give you a chance to protect yourself somewhat. More importantly, you get into a habit of behaving in a way that mitigates spread. And this is important because this has to become habitual as we move into the future. So that's specifically on the transportation thing and for arriving at destination. Now, here's something very important. You know, it's going to be virtually impossible to ban gatherings. Now, in that instance, it's probably appropriate then to restrict non-essential indoor gatherings where the chance of spread is the highest. And you know, if it's non-essential, try not to do it, you know. And if you do need to gather, make sure it's outside. So as an advice to the authorities, that would be a point where you could restrict if the numbers start reaching catastrophic proportions, you know, that you could restrict that and incentivize then the movement of activity outside in the open air. We know well-ventilated spaces are, you know, protect quite well. Certainly, we shouldn't be shutting down beaches and places where people can go and recreate openly in the open air with the sea breeze, where the chance of transmission is virtually nil. So, you know, and I think so that's a mature approach to take. Certainly will relieve the frustration, I think, that many people have felt during the last festive period and in the ensuing period, you know, of being very severely restricted and so on. Most importantly, you cannot, you should not relieve yourself of wearing a mask. Now, we know for a fact that this is aerosol spread of this virus.
Yeah.
Just to put that in context, if you were in a large room and sprayed a little air freshener in one corner, how long do you think it's going to take before the person on the other side is going to smell it? A few seconds.
Exactly.
And that's how this virus will spread. What you are smelling is the actual emission from the can. And if you replace the can with a mouth or a sneeze from a nose, then, you know, it's going to aerosolize in that way. That's how you catch it. So we must just then understand, if we understand that, we can take the common sense measures that are necessary at a personal level to avoid spreading it. Certainly, the last thing you want to do is ban travel. You know, when this variant was announced and the knee-jerk reaction from around the world was to ban travel from South Africa, fortunately, sense prevailed and they have rescinded that. You know, it's a fear-driven response. It doesn't take into account that this bug is already there. You know, and blocking travel is a punitive, silly measure in that instance. We know that there were some in our country who preferred, certainly in the Command Council, that we take those measures. And I think it's more driven out of fear rather than any other hidden agenda. But it was the wrong thing to recommend, and I'm very pleased that the President held the line on that, having taken appropriate scientific advice and didn't ban any travel in the country, because this bug has been all over the place by the time we even announced it.
Indeed. I mean, just as a, you know, as a final point to raise, I mean, obviously, if I were to travel internationally, I would probably have to produce a, not probably, most likely have to produce a, a negative COVID test, and you know, whether you're traveling cross-border into Zimbabwe via bus, or you are getting onto a flight to New York City or whichever other city hasn't put us on the red list, at this stage, you need to produce a negative COVID-19 test. And similarly also when you arrive in said country, at your own cost, you have to undergo further COVID-19 tests and so on and so on. Should we introduce similar measures here, taking into consideration that these are prohibitively expensive for some?
Yeah, it's pointless. You know, from what I said earlier, you can see that it doesn't really help. However, I think ports of entry do need to screen people who are potentially ill. And the limiting factor was the ability to use PCR tests. And, but, you know, the quick turnaround antigen test, I don't think that's unreasonable at all. You know, you can protect the person, you can protect the receiving country from spread and so on, so that they take the appropriate measures. And the measures now, you know, according to the latest advisory from the MAC, which we fully support, is that quarantining of contact is absolutely pointless. That if people are symptomatic and positive, then they should isolate for no more than 5 to 7 days. And that's what the MAC is recommending, 7 days, and no more than that. So with the president himself, who has been infected, as you know, coming out of isolation after 8 days, you know, he's going according to these guidelines now. These must become the norm. So we shouldn't act with fear. We should act with prudence. For sure, countries abroad are definitely going to want vaccine certificates and testing on arrival. And that's, you know, that's what it is. And we should just have to go through that. I don't know that we are that geared up at all our borders to do that. Certainly at our airports for international travel, we can also act accordingly. And those are not particularly punitive, especially if we're not going to put people in unnecessary quarantine. So I think this is an evolving situation. People should watch what's coming out officially and then just act accordingly. But no internal travel bans are necessary or warranted.
No, most definitely. And I think that for me is important, and that we behave ourselves, for lack of a better term, that we take the necessary precautions whilst traveling and whilst engaging publicly. Obviously, the other thing is as many people as possible need to get themselves vaccinated. And that's a voluntary process. You go, you get yourself vaccinated. It doesn't stop this completely, but, it minimizes some of the risks attached to it. But let's talk about Omicron in particular. I mean, as I said, we're in the midst of this fourth wave. This new variant, Omicron, that we to some extent got, punished for. Especially on the international travel basis. I mean, what do we know about it thus far, Doctor? Is it more transmissible? Is it more dangerous? Is it causing greater hospitalization? Or is it, are we able to tell some of the data that we have at the moment on this variant?
Okay, so there's a very interesting phenomenon with this variant. Mm. It is proving to be the most transmissible variant thus far in the pandemic. Mm. It is the virus. It is SARS-CoV-2 in full. It is the full virus. So when we saw the decoupling of this extremely steep rate of infection from the corresponding hospitalization, which turned out to be low, people looked at that phenomenon, and it's very clear that the third wave in particular infected up to 75% of our population, most of them asymptomatic, but they've all got natural immunity that is recent and therefore will be fairly robust. Secondly, our rather laggardly rate of vaccination has reached some 35 to 38% of the population now fully vaccinated. Mm-hmm. And that is significant as well. And the combination of these are the reasons we are not seeing progression to severe disease and hospitalization. And it's just a quirk of the natural situation with this virus. This virus is not, this variant, I should say, sorry, is not any different to the variants before. But it has now met a population that's far more protected than the earlier variants did and would therefore affect us in a different way. As I made the point at the outset, you know, our only role is to protect ourselves from this virus, you know, not going to any kind of battle with it. And the vaccine protects us, the personal protection protects us. Omicron is creating serious concern abroad. Now, we know in Europe that the numbers have rocketed to record levels, that is transmission. Now, even with the lower hospitalization, which they have also experienced, if, you know, your level of hospitalization is low, but your case numbers rocket to what beyond what you've had before, the proportionate amount of hospitalization will increase, you know, even if the rate is low, just in terms of absolute numbers. And that's what they're experiencing now with increased hospitalization. Not that they don't have the necessary immunity in the broader population that I just spoke about. It's just that the large number who have been infected will have a corresponding number of people who will need admission, and that number is also in absolute terms growing very large, and therefore putting pressure on their health services. We're not seeing that here yet, but you know, it is important, and all health professionals know that to maintain a stoic reserve on these issues is very important. You don't get ahead of yourself, because the variant can demonstrate pretty much here what it's demonstrating in Europe right now, with increased hospitalization, increased pressure on our services. What is hopeful is the plateauing, certainly in Gauteng, which was the epicenter, although the other provinces seem to be still on a sharp upward curve. But if we were to project, then perhaps in the next 3 to 4 weeks, we may begin to see a national plateauing and a general coming down of the overall infections. And if by that time we haven't witnessed a huge surge in hospitalizations, we can count ourselves lucky. Let me lastly say that while it's important to understand that this is a variant and that it hasn't perhaps had the ravaging effects of the previous variants, other variants may emerge which will. So we are not out of the woods here. We are in the pandemic, in the emergency phase of it, at any rate. We should take the posture accordingly and try and live our lives within the confines of that. It is not easy, of course, and especially for people with few resources, it is very difficult. We think that the state should begin to increase support for them. The 350 rand a month, grant that given should be increased and put on a more long-term basis, as the recent panel that looked into it has recommended, because it will be affordable and we should do it, but you're going to have to protect especially vulnerable people without resources. And lastly, we should increase the rate of vaccination as fast as we can, move all resources toward getting that done, especially for the older generation. We are talking about people getting the third Pfizer shot, the booster, only 6 months after their last shot, which is not really scientifically tenable, because other countries are doing it 3 months after the last shot. So I think the government needs to revise those recommendations sharply, so that more older people who've had their two shots can get vaccinated, because the biggest cohort that goes into hospital is from that age group. So that's what you should do.
Doctor, I really appreciate your time this afternoon. I think valuable insights there for what we need to do in terms of protecting ourselves, from infection, as you say. And I think to, by far and large, for now at least, into this present timeline, as well as into the not too distant future. The fact of the matter is, this is part and parcel of our way, of our life. This has changed our way of living. And we need to build up the necessary coping mechanisms to deal with this. I really do thank you for your time. All the best.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Dr. Aslam Dissu, medical expert and convener of the Progressive Health Forum. I think very important insights there. And I think for me, life needs to continue. People need to be able to travel. People need to go on holiday. But the fact of the matter remains that we need to behave ourselves.